Speaker, Louis called. They used the disintegrator to break in. The picture window was big and rectangular, a strange luxury for a prison cell. The glass was gone but for a few sharp crystal teeth around the edges. Windows to taunt the prisoner, to show him freedom? The window faced a port. It was half daylight. The shadow of the Terminator was coming in from spinward like a black curtain. Ahead was the harbor. Cubes that must be warehouses, rotting docks, cranes of elegantly simplistic design, and one tremendous ground effect ship in dry dock. All rust-red skeletons. To left and right stretched mile after mile of twisting shore. A stretch of beach, then a line of docks, then a stretch of beach. The scheme must have been built into the shore itself. A stretch of shallow beach like Waikiki, then deep water meeting steep shore, perfect for a harbor, then more shallow beach. Beyond, the ocean. It seemed to go on forever, until it faded in the infinity horizon. Try to look across the Atlantic. Dusk came on like a curtain, right to left. The surviving lights of the Civic Center brightened, while city and dock and ocean merged in darkness. To anti-spinward, the golden light of day still glowed. And Speaker had copped the cell's oval bed. Louis smiled. He looked so peaceful, the Kazin warrior. Sleeping away his injuries, was he? The burns must have weakened him. Or was he trying to sleep away his growing hunger? Louis left him there. In the near darkness of the prison, he found Nessus's cycle. His hunger was such that he choked down a food brick intended for a puppeteer gullet, ignoring the peculiar taste. The gloom had begun to bother him, so he turned on the headlamps on the puppeteer's fly cycle, then hunted down the other fly cycles and turned them on too. By the time he finished, the place was pretty bright, and all the shadows were intricate and strange. What was taking Nessus so long? There wasn't much entertainment in the ancient floating prison. You could spend just so much time sleeping, and Louis had used his quota. You could spend just so much time wondering what the tonge the puppeteer was doing up there before you began to wonder if he was selling you out. After all, Nessus wasn't just an alien. He was a Pearson's puppeteer with a record a mile long for manipulating humans to his own ends. If he could reach an understanding with a presumed Ringworld engineer, he might abandon Louis and Speaker right now, no hesitation. A puppeteer might have no reason not to. And there were two good reasons why he should. Speaker to animals would almost certainly make some last-ditch attempt to take the long shot from Louis Wu, to reserve the second quantum hyperdrive for Kazinti alone. A puppeteer could get hurt in the resulting battle. Safer to leave Speaker now. And to leave Louis Wu, because he probably wouldn't stand for such a betrayal. Besides, they knew too much. With Teela dead, only Speaker and Louis knew about the puppeteer experiments in guided evolution. The starseed lure, the fertility laws. If Nessus had been ordered to divulge such information, to gauge his crewmates' reactions, probably he had also been ordered to abandon them sometime during the trip. These were not even new thoughts. Louis had been alert for some such action ever since Nessus had admitted to guiding an outsider ship to Procyon via starseed lure. His paranoia was justified in a way, but there wasn't a tonge thing he could do about it. To save his mind, Louis broke into another cell. He cut across suspected locks with his flashlight laser turned to high and narrow, and on the fourth try, the door came up. A terrible stench came up, too. Louis held his breath, stuck his head and his flashlight laser in long enough to find out why. Someone had died in there after the ventilation had quit. The corpse was hunched up against the picture window with a heavy pitcher in his hand. The pitcher was broken. The window was intact. The cell next door proved to be empty. Louis took possession. He had crossed the pit to get a cell with a starboard view. He could see the rolling hurricane directly before him. Its size was respectable, considering that they had left it 2,500 miles behind. A big, brooding blue eye. To spinward was a tall, narrow, floating building as big as a passenger starship. Briefly, Louis daydreamed that it was a starship, hidden here in superb misdirection, and that all they had to do to get off the Ringworld was... It was a thin entertainment. Louis schooled himself to memorize the pattern of the city. It might be important. This was the first place they had found with any sign of a still-active civilization. He was taking a break, maybe an hour later. He was sitting on the dirty oval bunk, staring back at the eye, and beyond the eye, well, to the side, was a tiny, vivid gray-brown triangle. "Hmm," Louis said softly. The triangle was only just big enough to be visible as such. It was set squarely in the gray-white chaos of the infinity horizon, which meant that it was still day there, although he was looking almost directly to starboard. Louis went for his binoculars. The binoculars made every detail as clear and sharp as the craters of the moon. An irregular triangle, red-brown near the base, bright as dirty snow near the apex. Fist of God. Vastly larger than they had thought. To be visible this far away, most of the mountain must project above the atmosphere. The flycycle fleet had flown around 150,000 miles since the crash. Fist of God had to be at least 1,000 miles high. Louis whistled. Again, he raised the binoculars. Sitting there in the near darkness, Louis gradually became aware of noises overhead. He stuck his head up out of the cell. Speaker to animals roared, "Welcome, Louis!" He waved at him with the raw, red, half-eaten carcass of something approximately goat-sized. He took a bite the size of a Chateaubriand steak, immediately took another and another. His teeth were for tearing, not for chewing. He reached out to pick up a bloody-ended hind leg with the hoof and skin still on.
"We saved some for you, Louis. It has been hours dead, but no matter. We should hurry. The leaf-eater prefers not to watch us eat. He's sampling the view from my cell."
"Wait till he sees mine," said Louis. "We were wrong about Fist of God, Speaker. It's at least 1,000 miles high. The peak isn't snow-covered, it—"
"Louis, eat."
Louis found his mouth watering. There has to be some way to cook that thing. There was. He got Speaker to tear the skin off for him, then wedged the hoof of the beast into a broken stair, stood back and roasted the meat with a flashlight laser turned to high intensity, wide aperture.
"The meat is not fresh," Speaker said dubiously, "but cremation is not the answer."
"How's Nessus? Is he a prisoner, or is he in control?"
"In partial control, I think. Look up."
The spacer girl was a tiny doll figure on the observation platform, her feet trailing in space, her face and scalp showing white as she looked down.
"You see, she will not let him out of her sight."
Louis decided the meat was ready. As he ate, he was aware that Speaker watched him without patience, watched as Louis Wu slowly masticated each small bite. But to Louis it seemed that he ate like a ravening beast. He was hungry. For the puppeteer's sake, they pushed the bones through the broken window to fall on the city. They reconvened around the puppeteer's flycycle. "She is partially conditioned," said Nessus. He was having trouble with his breathing, or with the smells of raw and burnt animal. "I have learned a good deal from her."
"Did you learn why she mouse-trapped us?"
"Yes, and more. We have been lucky. She is a spacer, a ramship crewman."
"Jackpot," said Louis Wu.
Chapter 21. The Girl from Beyond the Edge. Her name was Halerloprillilar Hotrufan. She had been riding the ramship, Pioneer, Nessus called it after slight hesitation, for 200 years. The Pioneer ran a 24-year cycle that covered four suns and their systems, five oxygen atmosphere worlds and the ring world. The year used was a traditional measurement which had nothing to do with the ring world. It may have matched the solar orbit for one of the abandoned worlds. Two of the Pioneer's five worlds had been thick with humanity before the ring world was built. Now they were abandoned like the others, covered with random vegetation and the debris of crumbling cities. Halerloprillilar had run the cycle 8 times. She knew that on these worlds grew plants or animals which had not adapted to the ring world because of the lack of a winter-summer cycle. Some plants were spices, some animals were meat. Otherwise, Halerloprillilar neither knew nor cared. Her job had nothing to do with cargoes. Nor was she concerned with propulsion or life support. "I was unable to learn just what she did," said Nessus. The Pioneer carried a crew of 36. Doubtless, some were superfluous, Certainly she could have done nothing complex nor crucial to the well-being of ship or crew. She is not very intelligent, Louis.